At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What a big town. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And don't all say it at once. We know who invented Taco Tuesday.
Acknowledge me!
Thank you very much. Astros won a baseball game yesterday. Astros are officially, Blankers, better than the 2005 Tombstone Astros. So the Astros have that going for them. They're better than the Tombstone Astros that were buried dead after 45 games.
Whew, thank goodness. I guess baby steps. I guess when we can start, you know, finding different positives. I was going to ask you, what is a bigger positive last night? They won the game, or Alex Bregman showed signs of life more than we've seen all season?
I'd go the latter, I think. I think that, you know, if Bregman gets right, I think that gives you more than one victory. You know what I mean? Like, for this team to be good, I think that Alex Bregman has to be good. So I would go with the latter. Big game, double dong game from Alex Bregman. We haven't seen a double dong Alex Bregman in quite some time. He had the double that put the game away, which saved Josh Hader, which thank you, because Hader can be fully rested today if you need him. So I would go with Bregman. How would you answer that?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. This was what we kept wondering if we'd ever see again. This is something that, you know, when you think about, take all the other distractions out of it, the contract year and betting on himself and the weight gain and all the other stuff, he was still an above-average baseball player for the majority of his career, and all of a sudden there was legit questions about if he could ever find it again, if he could ever get close to what we were used to seeing. This is the first sign that there is life. There is a chance that he might be able to get back to respectability and more, and you're right. They need that kind of production at third base, offensively, defensively, and look, let's face it, as a leader and a guy that can kind of be a spark in the clubhouse and in the dugout as well, he had the intangibles as well when he's rolling. When he's not, and he's wearing it on his sleeve, it's a totally different atmosphere, and obviously the stats aren't close when he's struggling. So I definitely think it's the latter, and I definitely think that, you know, this is encouraging because I was ready to write him off. I was just ready to look at this season and go, I don't know if he's going to figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know if I was ever to that extreme. Now, would he get back to being an 800 OPS guy like he was last year? He's 820 the year before that. Now, that's something I was questioning, but I didn't think that Alex Bregman was going to be a 200 hitter and a 525 OPS guy for the rest of the year. I don't think he can be that bad, and I don't think it was a matter of him being old and washed either. I think it was mechanical. I think it's his swing. And yes, there is evidence that he has been bad to start seasons in his entire career. Like, it feels like not to this extreme. This extreme was even greater. Maybe it was because he's in a contract year. Maybe it's adding pressure and stress on top of a player who is a notorious slow starter. I don't know. Those are all theories, and they could be right. They could be wrong. Now, one game isn't going to make the rest of the year, but it's just, okay, you have a heartbeat. You have a pulse. Okay, this is a guy that maybe you can get going, because if you can get him going, he's one of your four best hitters, and that would be critical to the Houston Astros. So I wouldn't say I was going to write him off, like, because he's your third baseman. Like, there's no benching him. You're not going to sit him down for the rest of the year, even if he continues to struggle, because you know how good he can be. And it's not like a Abreu situation where he's 38 years old going on 53. Like, Alex Bregman is somewhat in the prime of his career. So you can't quit on him. Like, you're pot committed to Alex Bregman more so than you are a Jose Abreu. It's kind of like Josh Hader. Like, you're pot committed to Josh Hader because you just signed him to a 5-year deal and he's still young. Like, he doesn't have the signs of being an older player who's just flat out washed. So, I mean, you're pot committed to him. One game, like, is he back? Hope so. Hope so, but you got to do it for more than the one game. He took advantage of a couple of bad pitches yesterday, but the approach looks better. Like Mark DeRosa did a thing. Mm-hmm. He was talking about knob ahead of the ball, which to me is more of a golf term than a baseball term. Like I've always been taught with my golf club to the knob, put it in my hip, out in front of the ball, and then that creates the shaft lean too. Like that sounded more of a golf analogy or you know adage than it did a baseball adage. But hey, whatever works.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, some of the videos, I found some videos last week with Tony Gwynn, and one of the things that he was talking about was exactly that. Like, keeping the knob through the zone and ahead of the baseball, it allows you to get more barrel in the zone for longer periods of time. Whatever works. Like, I know he's a tinkerer, and that's why I said the last time I saw DeRosa do a video, I was like, he knows DeRosa. I would think that he would look at something like that. Now, after the game, he credited his wife, of all people, saying that, you know, with them being on the road for the last six games, that you obviously want to catch up with your family. You haven't been home in a while. And instead, he wanted to go to the batting cages. His wife said okay. He said he found something. And then it translated to batting practice where it was working, and he kept going, and he had a good game. I don't care at this point what it took and what he had to do and who he's thanking. Just please, for the benefit of this ball club, keep it going. You're right. We got to see it for more than one game. I would love to say that this is the start of him with the notorious slow starts, kind of getting right, figuring it out, and being more of a contributor that deserves to be in the top four in this lineup.
Yeah, I don't know if it was any of that. Like, you know, I don't. The knob is a good story. The family, whatever, that's a good story. Grinding in the cages early yesterday morning is a good story. I think it's the headband. I think the headband is the reason. First time I've seen him wear the headband. Have you seen him wear a headband?
No, they asked him about that after the game too, and he talked about the fact that, I guess, you know, of course he had his bat company on the headband, but I don't know if it just arrived or he just decided to wear it. But Julia was giving the headband full credit.
I do too. Like he has not recorded an out whenever he's wearing the headband. He has homered in two of three at bats wearing the headband. The one at bat he didn't homer was a double to right center field that burned the right fielder. I think it's Headband Bregman, and Headband Bregman is a new player. He's a completely never lose the headband. Alex Bregman on the mound. Spencer Arrighetti is what he needed to be. You know, this is the type of guy. And look, the A's aren't this, you know, juggernaut offense. This isn't the, you know, 27 Yankees. You know, you should be able to have good success against the Oakland single A's, even though you're looking up in the standings at them. But that's the Arrighetti that can play at this level. That's the Arrighetti whenever you have the fastball and you're working off of that, you're getting swing and miss with the breaking stuff, you're giving up two runs through five. That's the guy who can make turns in a big league rotation that has playoff aspirations. The guy that was pitching at the Bronx, that's not the guy. So it was really good to see that with Spencer Arrighetti yesterday, especially because you're committed to the six-man rotation during the stretch now of 29 games in 30 days.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You can nitpick and say the pitch count was up. That's why 86 pitches in five innings, he was done. But he was definitely more effective. You know, he seemed to be able to locate some pitches. He seemed to have some effectiveness with the sweeper, with the fastball up. And you need him to be that kind of guy. You need to at least get him to be able to keep it with minimal run production and give you at least five innings so that your team has a chance to compete. And like you said, if they're going to a six-man rotation, that's the minimum that you have to get out of him. You can't, and you're trying to avoid the blow-ups we've seen from him and Hunter Brown and others previously. So you'll take it. And you know, I don't know how long he's going to be, you know, in the rotation and how long they're going to go six man. But as long as in this stretch, this is something that they want to do, then that's something you have to see from him. And thankfully he got it. I don't care who they're playing at this point. I just needed to see a better Spencer Arrighetti, and that's another positive sign.
Yeah, I would take that start from Spencer Arrighetti every single time this year because it's a winnable game. If he's given up two runs over five innings, you're capable of winning the game. And then especially whenever your bullpen does what it does, four shutout innings. You know, Rafael Montero comes in, scoreless inning. Brian Abreu punches out two, doesn't give up a hit, looking more and more dominant like Brian Abreu is. Ryan Pressly doing what Ryan Pressly does and making the inning stressful. Allowed the tying run to come to the plate when they were up three, but got out of it. Who was the guy who struck out? Was it Seth Brown, the lefty? What was he looking at?
I don't know, but Seth Brown
was right down the middle.
Yeah, he's been struggling lately, but yeah, he did let a good pitch or two get by him.
Yeah, he watched a fastball almost middle for strike three. But Presley got out of it in a scoreless inning, and then the offense went to work in the eighth, so you didn't have to have Josh Hader pitch the ninth, which was good. I like Taylor Scott. Uncle Barney texted me, and he probably wouldn't like me saying this, but he was complaining about the Killer G's, the gag show. He was saying, what do these guys want? They've been Team Chaz over Jake Myers for the last few months, and now they're saying that they want to trade Chaz McCormick for a Phil Maton type. I didn't hear it. That's Uncle Barney relaying that information to me, but I don't understand why you would trade for a Phil Maton type, especially with a Chaz McCormick. Like, your middle relief has actually been better than anybody would have expected it to be. Between Taylor Scott and Seth Martinez, your middle relief's all right. And Rafael Montero's making $11.5 million. He's overpaid, certainly, but at least he's pitching all right. Like, he's got under a 3.5 ERA, so cool. So, like, what does a Phil Maton type add to this team, quite frankly? Like, you're replacing Sean Dubin. What does that do to translate in victories? And I understand where they're coming from, because the Astros do have, like, this surplus of average to above average outfielders, right? With Jake Myers, with Chaz McCormick, with Joey Loperfido. If you want to throw a Mauricio Dubon into the outfield mix, well, there's a fourth one. So I understand that you have a surplus of that, but I don't understand what adding a fringe middle reliever is really adding to this team when Taylor Scott has been good and Seth Martinez has been good. Yeah, they are your Phil Maton types.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, we go back to what has been a topic the entire season, which is, as this pitching staff continues to get healthier, as you continue to get pitchers back, you can add to your bullpen in terms of the arms that are going to hopefully be more effective, some of the guys that you've used. But you're right, those two main guys, they've been some of the brightest surprises of the season. When you talk about Seth Martinez and you talk about Scott and you talk about what they've been able to do, no one knew what to expect from Scott, and yet he continues to get guys out. Dubin's a guy that, when I looked at his stuff early on, I was optimistic. I thought, there's a guy that has some major league stuff, but he can't control it. It looks like, you know, more times than not, he's going to set up trouble for himself before he even tries to get out of it. That's where you can kind of replace those kind of guys as you get healthier with your pitching staff as well. So I don't want to give up on Chaz McCormick just yet, because whether he is the guy that he was last season or somewhere in between his previous years and last season, he's still a good baseball player. And, you know, I think there's a lot that he can add to this ball club, to where I'm not trying to trade Chaz McCormick at this point.
Even if you're, like, playing the hot hand out there with Jake, with Chaz, with Loperfido, with Dubon, it strengthens your bench. And I would argue that, like, a fourth, fifth outfielder, especially when it's, you know, your third outfielder is kind of, you know, streaky and maybe fringy as an everyday player, I would argue that's more valuable than, you know, the second to last middle reliever on your pitching staff. So I'm not in the trade one of those guys camp yet. Like, let's get them back. Let's see how they go. Let's see how the team goes until July 15th or somewhere around there, and then see where you're at. If Jake Myers Jake Myers hasn't done enough to like, you know, should he be playing every day right now? Yeah, sure. But has he proven that he is a no-doubt everyday player? No, he hasn't done that yet. You know, he needs more pelts in the wall. If he continues to produce like this for the next 2 months, and then maybe Chaz starts getting going a little bit, then let's entertain that conversation. Mm-hmm. But it's way too early to be begging for a Phil Maton type when this roster right now on May 14th doesn't need a Phil Maton type.
Well, and I think, too, when you look at it, we talk about position versatility as being kind of a hot term. Texans have used it. Casario's used it. But the Astros are looking for it. When you look at the fact Dubon's getting more reps at first base, when the fact that you can kind of have a platoon system if you need it, but have guys that, Dubon was a staple as a guy that could play one of the outfield positions as well as other positions in the infield. But if he ends up being able to spell Singleton a little bit, it's a good bat in the lineup when you need it. If they platoon at all or he gets some time there, that opens up opportunities for whoever the guys that are hot in the outfield, and you keep rotating them. But it's better to have the depth that has ability than the depth that they've had most of the season with guys that you just don't have confidence in, that it's hard to fathom when they got, you know, behind in the standings and were slumping the way they were, that the Gray Kessingers of the world and guys like that were going to find, you know, valuable minutes on this team spelling anybody. I think it's a positive. If Chaz, you know, he was 2-for-5 in Sugar Land, and I guess he's going to San Antonio to play the outfield. But when he comes back, if he can kind of, if it was a health issue and he can find his swing at all, it's a good problem to have because of the guys that actually give you insurance policies, depth, and more talent than what you've had on this roster all year.
Yeah. Dubon is like, that's why I don't know if I include Dubon in that outfield mix, because I think that Dubon's value is as a utility infielder and playing 65-70% of the games, giving guys days off, things like that. But he's playing out there, so I guess you have to throw him in the mix. The issue with Chaz and Jake is they're very similar. They both hit lefties well. They both struggle with righties. They're both kind of streaky. Both are good defenders in center. Jake's way better than Chaz defensively in terms of range. Jake actually has a better arm than Chaz. That would surprise some people. But they're very similar. Like, and it would make sense to have like a left-handed bat, but you're hoping that's what Joey Loperfido is. But I'm not in a hurry to trade one of those guys when both, all of them, have proven that they're not quite yet everyday players. They have in glimpses, but they haven't like done that consistently over a year or 2 years for a Phil Maton type. Like, you, Phil Maton types are a dime a dozen. Taylor Scott and Seth Martinez are Phil Maton types. 713-780-ESPN. Takeaways from yesterday's game one of the series between the Astros and the Athletics. Astros have now won 4 of their last 5 games. Maybe they're heating up. They'll try to take game 2 of the series coming up tonight. Kyle Tucker had another impressive day at the plate, at least had a ribby after Jose Altuve reached base. He had that opposite field double into left center field. Kyle Tucker is a top player. Where would you have Kyle Tucker amongst the rest of Major League Baseball? 713-780-ESPN. It's a busy show. It's a Tuesday, so a cash him or trash him. A big, big news from the WNBA. Caitlin Clark makes her debut. How much does that move the needle? And some Texan prop bets are out there, too, I find interesting. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Have I told you about the greatness of Gentle Ben? Gentle Ben's fantastic. I got criticized the other day by a caller saying, you talk so well about Gentle Ben, but it's even better than you talk about Gentle Ben. Yeah, that's how good Gentle Ben is. You can't do it justice. It's so good. Get your hands on it, give it a shot, and you're going to be happy that you did. Vodka, gin, bourbon, whiskey, they do it all. All of them are in my rotation. And Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anybody else. How? Well, their revolutionary Percedo technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you will ever taste. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it, including gluten. Gentle Ben isn't going to brag about that one, though. All spirits are, of course, naturally gluten-free. Try a sip of Gentle Ben vodka, gin, straight bourbon, or cask-strength bourbon. Compare it to what you drink, and you will never go back. I've been a Gentle Ben man ever since I had that first sip. As soon as you taste it, you're going to be Gentle Ben and nothing else as well. I promise you. You get all the flavor, none of the burn. If you're headed to an Astros game soon, stop by the Gentle Ben bar just to the left of the Crawford boxes. Pick up some Gentle Ben on the way to your seats. If you're in the Alvin area, stop by the tasting room. It's a great way to spend a few hours and to try some of their spirits. It's a fantastic spot. Look for it at the liquor store, ask for it at the restaurant or the bar, or just head to gentlebin.com. Gentlebin.com. You can order straight from the website, gentlebin.com. The Gentle Ben, the secret ingredient is what's not in it.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN. Kyle Tucker's a top player. 713-780-3776. Get to that in a couple of minutes. Any other takeaways before we move on from yesterday's game?
I think we covered most of them.
I had a couple more. The Jeremy Pena was getting complimented for his aggressiveness yesterday in the second inning whenever he came around to score from first on that Singleton tapper to third base, which, cool, like, you know, be aggressive, make things happen, don't run into outs. I think we're overrating that play a bit. If the throw is halfway decent, he's dead meat.
I think
like,
he's out,
it's an
yeah.
easy out at third base. Like, and you would have taken away a runner in scoring position. It's great that it works. I like when the Astros try to get aggressive. Now, I want smart base running over aggressive base running, but it was cool when Jake Meyers stole second base late in the game, throwing error, moved up to third, Altuve a little, you know, seeing eye single up the middle, and then Meyers scored. Like, that's the kind of aggressive base running I want to see. I wouldn't, like, you know, I don't know how much they're communicating because that seems to be a spot as a weak spot. But if that's something that they talk about after the game, like, and just kind of talk about what happened in the game, that's one where I'm telling Pena, hey, man, love your speed, love that you're trying to be aggressive. Maybe don't do that one again.
Yeah, I get where he sees the open base and thinks he can beat the catcher there. But not only did he not beat the catcher there, but instead of like trying to avoid the catcher, I don't know if you do like an early hook slide or you roll or you do something, but then to just kind of hit the tap the brakes and bow out, I'm like, man, I'm glad the catcher didn't catch that ball, because I didn't get a true definitive answer. Maybe you did. I mean, an angle. But it looked to me, from every angle I saw, like if the catcher does get led the right way and led into the baseball to catch it, that he should have tagged him out. And in the first inning in that situation, a bit risky. I would think he should beat the catcher there, but obviously he didn't.
I mean, the catcher was there. The throw was so far in front of him. It was a bad throw from first. 8807 disagree. The catcher had to cover third and didn't get there. Oh, he was there. He was at the bag, but the throw was errant. It was 10 feet in front of him, and if it was a decent throw, a halfway decent, it didn't even take a good throw. It took a decent throw, he would have been out by a mile. It would have been an easy play, but it was a bad throw. He benefited off a bad play. 60-30, my only take of the day. The Astros are going to win just enough to keep Crane Gang and Brown from trading anyone. ALCS maybe or trade and replenish. Oh, he says choose. ALCS maybe or trade and replenish before they go all for nothing. So you had to pick one. ALCS maybe, but nothing more, or trade and replenish before they all go for nothing.
Well, we don't know nothing more. I mean, ALCS maybe means that you say there's a chance. I think once they get in, that this is a roster that can still compete in the playoffs and go a long way. I'll take that all day, every day.
I'm usually more of a prospect hugger between the two of us, and I'm going, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna mail it in. That's terrible. All right, 713-780-ESPN. 8807 said catcher was still running. He never made it there. If he makes a decent throw, he catches it on the move and tags Pena. They almost collided.
Yeah,
what do you mean he wasn't there? Pena had to avoid a collision with the catcher who was running to cover third. If the throw was anywhere near him where it's catchable, Pena's out by a mile. All right, Kyle Tucker is a top what player? How high are you willing to go on Kyle Tucker?
15.
Ooh, I think that's light.
It might be, but I mean, he's got to maintain this, and there's plenty of guys up at the top of that list that have that kind of capability too. I didn't want to overstate it, so I'll say top 15.
Yeah, I think that's light. It's not like this is Kyle Tucker, you know, in the first year. Now, I do think he's playing above where he's been the last couple of years. Like, you look at his OPS, he's flirting with a 1,000 OPS. His career high is 917. He leads baseball in OPS. He leads baseball in home runs. And maybe he does win one of those categories. Maybe he finishes top three or top five in those categories. I would have Kyle Tucker in my top 10. I think Kyle Tucker is a top 10 baseball player right now with his combination of, like, he does everything at the plate. Like, he hits for average, he gets on base, he hits for power, he can steal some bags on you. I don't think his defense is as good as it was 2 years ago, but it's still fine. Like, his defense is still good. It's not gold glove good, but it's still good. He'll throw out a base runner from time to time, gives you a good defensive center field, not great anymore, or right field, I mean. Yeah, I would have him in my top 10. 713-780-3776. How high are you willing to go on how good top 10 is? X-Ron on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Top 10 easy and can listen to top 5?
Easy.
I think he's easy top 10 myself. Now, top 5, he probably will need to finish this season with a lead in one of those two categories. Like, if you lead the league in home runs, you're a top 5 player, I think. If you lead the league in OPS, I think you're a top 5 player, I think. Infuentes says Tucker is top 7 player, everything considered. And that's the thing, he's a two-way player. I would go as far to say that Kyle Tucker is the best player on the Houston Astros right now. I think he's slightly better than Altuve, and because he's more of a, and look, Yordan isn't off to a great start. I think he's been hitting into some bad luck. But yeah, I have no problem saying Kyle Tucker is the best Houston Astro currently on this team.
Okay. Again, it's still early enough in the season that I expect Yordan's going to find it again. I think Kyle Tucker's going to come back a little bit, and I don't want to discount what Altuve's done. But right now, on the hot streak that he's on, and he's combining the power with the average and getting key hits, right now he is the best player on this team.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Or I'm not arguing that play at third anymore. 5623, top 25. Top 25 is low. I need to be top 25. 5895, Tucker is gold glove, batting champ threat every year, MVP potentially every year, top 10. I don't know if Kyle Tucker's been an MVP threat so much yet in his career. This year, definitely, though. Like, if you're voting on the first 40-ish games. Kyle Tucker, I'm sure, is probably top five in baseball.
I think his numbers clearly state, especially, I mean, and you can just start with the home runs, but his numbers should clearly state statistically he should be in the top 10 in this league for the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if you're leading the league in home run, and look, I mean, if this continues, blah, 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 it's not really part of the conversation. But if you were voting right now, the win total for the Astros ain't great, so that might ding them a little bit for that. Mm-hmm. But if you lead the league in home runs and lead the league in OPS, you're definitely finishing top five in MVP voting.
I'm just rattling off names to myself to just say Shohei, Acuna Jr., Soto, Mookie, Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have Bryce Harper ahead of Kyle Tucker at this current stage.
I mean, Bryce Harper's over the last couple of years, too. I expect Bryce Harper, I mean, he can carry his team just as well as anybody.
Yeah, but you're going back a baseball card. You're not going the right now, this moment.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
Which is why, I mean, that's why I can't put Yordan on it right now. I mean, Altuve's in the conversation somewhere in the top 20 because of his numbers. I'm just thinking, like, the best teams in baseball right now and their best players and or at the start of the year when people were talking about MVP-type candidates.
I don't know why you're going to the start of the year, though. Like, we're talking 40-plus games through.
Because at the same time, yes, you credit it for the 40-plus games through. They got to finish the season with the same kind of numbers or have the same kind of – so there's a chance for the guys that maybe don't have the numbers Tucker has now. By the end mm-hmm. of the year, they'll get better. Tucker might come back a little bit, so where it levels off – I'm not trying to discount Kyle Tucker, but there's a lot of great baseball players in this league.
No, I think that's the beauty of the conversation, yeah. is that it allows for nuance. Like, some people are willing to put more weight on, you know, the previous 3 years, let's call it, and not as much weight in the first 40-ish games of the year. Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's wrong. It's, you know, some people fluctuate. I'm more like, what are you doing for me lately? And a guy that leads the league in home runs and leads the league in OPS is top 10 to me. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jimmy in Webster. He wants to switch the conversation up a little bit. That's okay. Jimmy, you're in the hive with the bees. What's up?
Yeah, I was watching Alex Bregman last night. Impressive post-game interview. I mean, I think, you know, he has to be that cocky. I mean, I know he got a couple of hits, but that last one, that right fielder could have got it, caught it. I mean, I know it's the A's, but he's still a professional player. Well, y'all stop. I hang up and listen.
Appreciate it, Jimmy.
I mean, the thing is whether he gets that last hit or not, when you kind of take the last three games of the road trip into last night, he had a hit in every game in Detroit. He comes in and does what he did last night. He's still hitting, you know, two and change, very minimal change. But at the same time, over his last four games, he's probably hitting over 400. So when you look at it, you say, I don't really care about the last at-bat when he has two bombs in the game. He seems to be finding his swing. He says after the game that he finally found something that clicked and that it's working for him, because that's how much, as we talked about in the first segment, that's how much you need him if you're going to do anything this season as a whole in baseball. You have to get contributions from him and the third base spot. So, you know, regardless of the last at-bat and what happened there, it's extremely encouraging and should be a storyline that he did what he did last night, and he's also done it at the back end of the road trip.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what Jimmy's really saying, though. I think Jimmy's saying that, hey, he shouldn't be arrogant because he had one good game. Like, he's a 218 hitter with a 615 OPS, and he's acting like he's Kyle Tucker. So, like, I'm happy that Bregman has that attitude, and Todd, the show on Twitch, cocky Bregman is the best Bregman, which is true. Like, he got called a D-bag in the past whenever he was young, like, and that's whenever Alex Bregman was really going. So, like, there's a healthy line between you want him to be confident, but I do understand where Jimmy's coming from. Like, the guy's been a major disappointment. The guy, and, you know, he still has a chance to earn some money back, but if he went into free agency with a 218 average and a 615 OPS, he would have cost himself millions mm-hmm. of dollars. So, like, yeah, it's cool to have, like, the brash Alex Bregman for at least a day, but I understand that Jimmy's saying, hey, this guy's hitting 615 OPS on the year with a 218 average. You shouldn't be acting like he has Kyle Tucker's numbers. So I do understand where he's coming from.
No, but, and you know, you could even go so far as to say in the postgame when they said, did it bother you when you moved down? You know, he didn't like it, but, you know, he tolerated it. There's nothing you could say. You don't have the grounds to do that. But I think, in my opinion, the best Alex Bregman is the cocky version of Alex Bregman, which has been missing for a long period of time. And part of what makes him who he is as a player is when he's cocky, he's confident. When he's confident, he has he's in a different mode from the ability to kind of attack all plays. And it just seems like he's in his element when he's that way. So I was happy to see it. I'm happy to hear it. Yeah, I get that you can obviously have grounds to criticize him because he doesn't have the numbers to back it up yet. But if that's part of the overall bravado that gets Alex Bregman back, I'm all for it because this team doesn't have a whole lot of guys like they used to have with mound visits and dugout celebrations and all the things that kind of bring positive energy into that dugout. He was one of those guys, and he gets right when he has that kind of frame of mind. I like it.
Are you putting value in mound visits?
No, I was kidding about the mound visits, but
I just wanted to be sure.
But
I wanted to make sure.
You know, on every team, there's a guy that can kind of be the spark plug that can energize everybody, get them motivated, or get them dialed in, or do the things that need to be done. And Bregman can be that guy. And in the past, when he's cocky, he likes being that guy. He wears it on his sleeve, but he wears it in the way he goes about his body language and his business when he's slumping. And it almost brings other guys down to where if that's what it takes as part of the overall, I'll take it. Because cocky Bregman is a better baseball player.
Yeah, I'd err on that side, too. 713-780-ESPN. Someone texted and said, don't forget Kyle Tucker led baseball in RBIs last year, 112. That is true. Good point on that. Other people, where does Tucker rank amongst baseball? USC on Twitter says he's a top 15 player, Mr. $300 million, alluding to the contract he's going to get. DK says top 15. Tucker's leg, he says 10. Brooks says 25. Joe says 10. Brian says 8. Alfred has, he's got some growing up to do. He's immature. And then Anthony says top 3. So that's just the range of where people have Kyle Tucker right now, which is beauty of the conversation. 713-780-ESPN. You can weigh in on that if you'd like. 713-780-3776. Also, what are the worst things that you've heard said about top 10 center fielder Jake Meyers this season? And also, what's more important from your center fielder, arm or range? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I got something going. If you're a golfer, if you're a whiskey drinker, if you want to combine the two at one event, I've got something for you. X-Golf Katy is hosting Bourbon and Bunkers. It's a whiskey tasting event this Friday, May the 17th at X-Golf and Katy. You can grab your buddies. You can enjoy some incredible bourbon from all around the world. You can play in a closest to the pin contest on the simulators. And you can do it all with golf-minded, sports-minded people like yourself. The most accurate golf simulators that technology has to offer are the X-Golf simulators. The only ones in the area are in Katy. And I'm telling you, it's an unbelievable space because it's the best combination of sports bar meets golf simulators. 8 of those great simulators, all the TVs that you could ever want for a sports bar environment, great food, great beverage. And now this Friday, a Bourbon and Bunkers whiskey tasting event. It's phenomenal, but space is limited. You got to sign up. And once you're there, and if you're a golfer, you try the simulators, whether you do the closest to the pin contest or you just try one of the other simulators, you're going to be hooked. You're going to come back again and again. When it rains and your tee time gets canceled, you're going to want to be there. When you're looking for some place to hit balls after dark and you know that you can go in and play your own golf balls and have every shot dialed down to the distance, the spin, and the direction of every shot, including your putting and your chipping, you're going to love this place even more. Check them out today. Get online, X-Golf Katy. Make your reservations because the space is limited. But it's this Friday, May the 17th. It's Bourbon and Bunkers. Be a part of it now.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Hate when people hate on cockiness. Let them cook. 8807, all right. 3977, Bregman was always that player. Remember that year they was doing the team stare? Yeah, that became addicting. Everybody started doing the stare because of the Bregman stare. Yeah, I think that's fair. 8327, Kyle Tucker, top 10, maybe in the last 6 games? Come on, man. Did you say that? I don't know.
Did I say it?
I don't know. I said he was top 10, period, not last 6 games. So I don't know. Maybe you just misheard us. Kyle Tucker has the World Series ring. Case closed. Okay. Valuing winning there a little bit. Okay. All right. 713-780-ESPN. Astros lineup is out today, by the way. No Loprofito. Altuve, Tucker, Yordan, Pena, Bregman, Yiner, Singleton, Myers, Dubon. So there's the Astros nine. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, at least Joey was brought up to play.
Yeah, Sears is a lefty that's starting for the A's today, so I think it's tough to get Loprofito into the lineup whenever he's a lefty because the Astros have guys that can hit righties. Myers needs to be in the lineup against maybe every day, but especially against lefties. Dubon hits lefties really well. To me, it came down to Singleton or Loprofito today. I thought Singleton might get a day because he's been getting this run of play, and you know Dubon's been working at first. I thought they might play Dubon at first, Loprofito in left field today, but apparently not. So
I say a little bit tongue in cheek, but because of the fact that we've already been on the fact that on the road trip, I thought he'd play more, and I don't think he's done anything that doesn't warrant it. The good news is that you got a lot of guys that are in the same boat that have been performing well, so that it's a good problem to have if you're Joe Espada, that you can pick some guys, like you said, whether it's situational and matchups that look like it trends more towards one guy or the other. There shouldn't be a whole lot of complaining right now because everybody seems to be stepping up a little bit in that outfield rotation, which is a good thing.
Yeah, you have a surplus there right now, and it's a surplus of guys that are going pretty good as opposed to a surplus of guys that just can't get anything going. So, yeah, I mean, it's not – there's nothing that I see wrong with that. Bregman's up to the five spot. Singleton moves down a little bit. But, again, I think it's because of the lefty. I think it's because you have Sears on the mound. Bregman, of course, is right-handed. Singleton is lefty. Singleton does kind of have reverse splits, and Bregman does have reverse splits. He hits righties better than lefties, but still going with the lefty-righty thing. I think that was the decision there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are the worst things that you remember being said about top 10 center fielder Jake Myers?
He's a buffoon.
I think that's kind of true, though.
The S word was mentioned. He didn't.
What's your S word? Stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not the S word.
My kids.
I was like, what do you mean?
That's my kids. They teach them at school. That's the S word. I was like, wait, we don't use that word around the kids. My daughter's like, stupid? I go, oh, never mind.
It took me a second.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, deer in the headlights. I've been as critical as anybody on him in the past.
I don't think so. I don't think you've been as critical as others.
Like, not this season, but in the past because of what we've seen. But, I mean, I go back to the attempted stolen base where he went face first.
I mean, you got no excuse for that, though.
That was just ridiculous.
You'd have to take the L there. Yeah. Like, that's just, that's my bad. You got to concede defeat on that one. I've seen people say he should be DFA'd and he doesn't belong in Major League Baseball. Like, I think that's probably, other than, like, mean things and bad words, I think that's about as poor a
that's
thing
harsh.
You could say. About Jake Myers.
Even at the start of the year, I said, I don't think he should be your starting center fielder, but I said he should be on the roster. He's got the capabilities defensively and as a pinch runner to be a guy on this team. But yeah, that's fairly harsh.
XX Wrong said he looks lost, always like he's about to ask a dumb question or ask for directions. I think that's true.
Yep. Like, I can't argue that one.
Yeah, even though he's playing well, I do think he definitely has deer in the headlights. He always kind of looks like he is lost. Like, I think that is a fair thing to say. I had people tweeting at me yesterday. I guess that I'm the Jake Myers stan. I guess I'm the Jake Myers defender. Even though I've called Jake Myers a fringe everyday guy, should play against lefties and maybe a fourth outfielder defensive replacement. Now, I mean, I haven't said that, like, Jake Myers is the second coming of Ken Griffey or anything like that. But I do think he is performing well. His defense has been really good. His OPS 779, like, that's well above average, especially whenever you factor in that he's playing a premium defensive position. He's certainly producing so far for the Houston Astros. But people tweet at me every single time there's a questionable throw by Jake Myers. Like, did you see his throw? Yes, that's a fact that Jake Myers does not have a tremendous arm. It is a fact that Jake Myers does – that is a liability of his. One thing that annoys me, though, is that we act like every player is perfect. Like, every player has their strengths and every player has their weaknesses. We could pick apart Jose Altuve. Like, look at Jose Altuve when runners in scoring position and look at his approach at the plate. He swings at everything. Same thing with Yiner Diaz. We can nitpick weaknesses in every player
because there is no such thing.
There you go. His defense now isn't as wonderful as it used to be either, even though he'll make some diving plays here and there. So you can nitpick every player. Every player has a weakness. There is no perfect player. Maybe even steroid Barry Bonds, wasn't like a tremendous left fielder at that stage of his career. So it wasn't the runner that he used to be. So you can nitpick every single player. So yes, it is a fact, and I'll agree with everybody, that it is a fact that Jake Myers has a poor arm. But it is also a fact, and this is where people fail to tell the rest of the story whenever they tweet at me, that he has tremendous range. So if you're going to tell me that his arm sucks, I will say, yes, you're right, but let's go ahead and finish his defensive evaluation and talk about what wonderful range he has, because both things are true, and both things can be true.
Was it second inning last night when that ball was punished to right center field?
Yeah.
And I thought that was going off the wall, but no one was going to get it. And Jake kind of, he ended up coasting at the very end. He kind of padded the brakes a little bit to make the play, and that was impressive. Like,
yeah,
go ahead.
I think he had kind of the perfect litmus test to this conversation, both in yesterday's game. In the catch that you referred to in right center field, second or third inning, with two outs, runner at second. Like, how many guys make that catch? I went back and I looked at it because I have some access to, like, some behind-the-scenes MLB research stuff. Pat my back. And that was a 55% catch probability.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, slightly more than half of major league center fielders make that catch. So, like, okay, let's give him credit for that. And then later in the game when they scored their first run, it was that relay,
yep.
which Pena's not great either. He kind of threw it high. But maybe he was rushing it because it didn't get to him quickly because Myers doesn't have a tremendous arm. So we saw the range. We saw the arm. So I wanted to throw out the question to the Hive, to everybody, to you, to Brian, 713-780-3776. What is more valuable from a center fielder? Because both things are true. Yes, Myers has a poor arm. Yes, Myers has tremendous range as a center fielder. What do you prefer more in your center fielder, range or arm?
Oh, there's no doubt to me it's range, because I think to the point of the second play, too, I don't think that, and we saw Atlanta do it early, I think there's a few teams that have tried to capitalize on Jake's arm. And I thought last night it kind of caught him off guard, whether Pena even double pumped and was a little surprised. But I agree with you that Pena had a shot at him. But between the two, I don't know that there were, you know, that you ever really, if you get a center fielder that's got a cannon, then that's just an added bonus for you. But the big thing is where runs are saved is by being able to get into the gaps, by being able to go back over your shoulder and be able to get balls as they head to the gap or up against the wall, come in charging and get a ball, because there's always going to be a relay. You don't have to get it most times all the way to the cutoff man at the mound or to the plate. If you can hit the relay, and we've seen Tuck do that a lot in the right field corner too, where you just play the relay man the right way and you can still make plays. You can have a cannon, but if you can't get to the ball, then it takes. You're not going to save as many runs as you can if you can cover the gaps and you can cover the fence. I think range all day, every day.
Yeah, I'm a range guy myself, and like, there's not perfect ball players. And yes, it'd be like if Jake Myers had a cannon, obviously I would take that, but he doesn't. Like, and you have right now are the options that you have. You have Joey Loperfido, who is capable of playing center, which I question his range.
Range,
his arms,
yeah.
His arm's also not very good, by the way. He throws. I'm not going to say what I was thinking. He throws awkwardly. He throws it from, like, this weird shot put style. He doesn't have a very good arm. Chaz McCormick's arm's actually worse than Jake's. Now, Dubon has a strong arm, but Dubon lacks range. So, like, you don't have this option if you're Joe Espada where you can just play this defensive center fielder. Like, Jose Siri, I thought, was a really good defensive center fielder. He had tremendous range. He had a
good
cannon.
Gun. Yeah.
But he didn't have that option.
On your point on Dubon, too, the angle that you take matters as well, because he's got an arm. And I think he's capable of being rangy, but a lot of times you see his footwork get all crazy at the end because he doesn't get the right angle to cut a ball off or get to a ball quicker. Because that's probably, as much as anything else, that's a product of not playing out there enough or playing every day at center field. But at the same time, I think some of the angles matter sometimes that he doesn't take, even though he does have some speed to be able to get to baseballs that I don't think that Chaz would get to.
Yeah, he doesn't have tremendous angles, you're right. And a lot of times, too, like Dubon has a strong arm. Dubon's a little inaccurate with the arm at times, too. So, like, it's great to have a cannon, but if you're not putting it on the bag, what's the use? Like, if you're throwing it 10 feet away from the plate and a play at the plate, it's the same thing as Jake not having a chance at the guy. So you have to be accurate with that arm, too. But, yeah, range to me is the easy answer. King says, I need my center fielder to have great expected WOBA. Well, you'd be in luck because Jake Myers is 357 and in the top half, well, actually above average, like almost top third in expected WOBA. So you're in luck there, King of Twitch. XX wrong, in my opinion, range and good jumps on ball is way more important than arm. Yordan cannon, no range. So there's that. There's not many people that say arm, you know. 5718 range with Myers. If you can get to any ball, you won't need the big arm in most situations unless a runner's on third and tagging. I mean, there's base hits into the outfield. There's guys going first to third. So, like, arm does come into play, but it is minimized a little bit.
That's where they've caught him the most, is the kind of the liner or the ball on the ground that gets through the infield, and teams are pressing it every time. If it goes to center field with Jake in center field, they just don't think he can make that throw, whether he puts enough on it or makes it accurately. That's where we've seen more of than in years past, that's where they're trying to capitalize on Jake's arm.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're taking extra bases on his arm. There's no doubt. Like, that is a fact. Like, no one is arguing that point. What we're trying to say is, what do you value more? Mm-hmm. And you have to tell the entire story whenever you're evaluating a player. It would be like taking Hunter Brown strikeouts and then not looking at his walks and his, you know, hits against him. Tell the whole story on a player. Let's have the full evaluation. Kenneth says Pena was surprised that Jake hit the cutoff guy. glad to see Jake hit him. Yeah. Yeah, that's something he's got to do.
I thought Pena double clutched a little bit. I thought it caught him off guard. I think Jake made the right play, especially whether, you know, he knows his shortcomings or not. But I thought Jake got the ball to Pena quick enough. And then I think Pena was a little bit startled when he turned and looked like, oh, they're going and I got a shot at him. And then he's with a guy that has an above average arm. He didn't make a good throw.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Pena's arm is not actually below average.
It's below average?
Yeah, it doesn't grade out well. He was high. I think the reason that Pena's arm doesn't grade out well is sometimes he'll lob it over to first base if he has time. And these things measure everything. So when you're lobbing it over there, it's going to affect your overall like arm strength whenever they're averaging every single throw you make. Because I was surprised when I saw that too. His arm does grade below
average. I'm surprised because like the plays I'm talking about, most of the times on the relays when Tuck gets the ball in the corner, it's a relay to Pena, and Pena's arm on the relay to get it home is normally it's just on a rope. To where I believe, and a lot of the plays in the hole that he makes, I believe that he's got an above average arm. I'm a little surprised to hear that, but I'm not the numbers guy that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a website that tells it to you. His arm strength's in the 31st percentile. So, like, but that surprised me too, because I think whenever he has to unleash one, he's capable. Now, he doesn't have Correa's arm. I don't think anybody has Correa's arm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think Pena's arm's poor.
Well, I shouldn't say that. There's a guy in Pittsburgh and a guy in Cincinnati that would probably like to have a word.
Dela Cruz is a cannon.
Oh, and the kid in Pittsburgh has a.
You talking about O'Neill Cruz?
Yeah,
I haven't noticed that with him as much. I've seen the Reds guy. They
clocked Cruz at 100 miles an hour.
That's insane.
Yeah, and the latest one, Dela Cruz, they dared him to throw a ball from the dugout into the bleachers in center field, and he put it at least 10 rows deep.
Yeah, those guys are freaks.
Oh.
And you know what? You know what I've noticed, especially with the Dela Cruz in Cincinnati, and I bet you Cruz is the same way, is that they know they have a heater. They know they have a howitzer. They don't lob it over there very often either. Like, you have a routine play. You could lob it over there and easily get the guy. They're firing it over there. They're showing off their
exactly.
arm.
It's like the old Sean Dunstan days in Chicago when he had just this any routine ground ball. He was like, y'all paid your money. You want to see this? Boom, here you go.
I used to love Dunstan. You know who else would do that? He was a catcher. Was Benito Santiago.
Throw people out from his butt.
He would try to show off his arm any chance he had.
Yep.
And I loved it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. What are the odds that we'll look back in September and just laugh and laugh and laugh about the start of this year? But how much will we look at this stretch of games as when the Astros got things on track and become the team we expected? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
How much will we look back at this stretch of games as to being the turning point of when the Astros got back on track? I'm talking September, hopefully October. We look back at this stretch like that. It's when the Astros did it. We'll discuss that in a couple of minutes. Key from L.A., glad the Astros have something good going. Makes for a better show. You guys been sad for the past few weeks, LOL. Laughing emoji. You know what? We just got your jack-of-all-trades, receiver, fullback, special teams ace. So take that, Key from L.A. Skoronic. It's going to be Texan. He's going to make a huge play in the Super Bowl as you watch the Super Bowl from home, watching your L.A. Rams without Aaron Donald miss the playoffs. Key from L.A.
Embrace the suck, Key.
Yeah. Yeah. Skoronic's going to be the difference for the Houston Texans. You're going to rue the day that you traded Skowronek to the Texans for a late-round pick swap. You're going to rue the day. I can't say that with a straight face. Honey Glaze Branham, I need an outfielder who has perfect crow hop form. Sounds like one of those little like high school Harrys that coaches Little League Baseball. You got to have
they're out there
crow.
Oh, I know. In droves.
Oh, I know. 3897, but his Pena diving plays, his arm looks excellent. See, that's where I'm at with blinkers, is that we do like we see Pena when he has to unleash and unleash it. But there's a lot of times when he has time that he kind of lobs it over there. And I think that hurts his, like, you know, Statcast numbers for whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I don't look at those numbers. I just, from the eye test to me, I've always thought he's had an above average arm. I'm always very confident in him to have a strong throw, whether it's in a relay or a play on the infield, to where, yeah, I was a bit surprised when you said that.
713-780-ESPN. In September, hopefully October, how are we going to be looking back at this stretch? You think that we could be looking back at this stretch saying, you know, this was the point where the Astros got their season going, got it on track?
I think we can. I think we definitely can. And I think there's a lot of reasons to point to. I know that I was a little hesitant to say the schedule looks easy right now because the A's, the Tigers, they're better teams than they've been in the past. So, and, you know, as bad as this team has been to start the season, it's kind of hard to look at anybody and say you should be able to steamroll them. You should have an advantage and you know, be able to capitalize on them. But when you look at the perfect storm, right, it's like everything's coming together. Singleton continues to hit fair, at least with some pop, to where you got something out of what you literally thought was going to be nothing from him the rest of the year. And I said you should have DFA'd him. I'm on the record as that. I get that. But when you look at the fact that Bregman has been such a needed piece, and that at the end of the road trip leading into last night, he's starting to look like Alex Bregman again. And this team has won now. Four out of five? They've won four out of five. So they won four out of five games. You've got more with the A's, a lot of them, and the Angels. Yes, that Brewers team is still a decent team. But I think in September, looking back at the fact that in the loss column, you're only six games out of first place behind Seattle, that we easily could be looking at this stretch and saying if they play their cards right, if they just do what they've been doing, this could be the stretch that turns it back in the right direction.
I mean, I hope so. Like, it's hard. I mean, you can't predict the future. I think that the Astros are going to give it a run. I've kind of teetered on can they, like, still win this division. Now, where you're at in the standings is doable. Like, where you're at in the standings isn't the issue. Where you're playing in terms of, like, how you're playing and what the win-loss record's the issue. You're not out of the race by any stretch of the imagination. It's just like, okay, will the real Astros show up? Do we think that this team is the real Astros that we've come to know? Like, I need to see more. Like, the whole prediction thing, we'll see. Like, I'd rather wait and see and you know, react to what we're seeing as opposed to try to guess what this team is going to be. Do I think they have a chance? Yeah, absolutely. I think they have a chance. I think that you have a pitching rotation that's capable. It is interesting to me. I think that their pitching philosophy, I've just kind of noticed this. I think they're trying to pitch more to soft contact than they are good swing and miss. You see a lot of these pitchers on the Astros have really good at, like, miss barrel rate, but their strikeout rate isn't terrific. And it's like you have plenty of stuff on this team. So I'm wondering if their philosophy's changed a little bit to where they're trying to get soft contact and, like, they get BABIPed to death. Their bullpen's fine. Like, who they, like, maybe their last guy is a hole, like Sean Dubin, Brandon Belak, like, whatever, but that's a mop-up guy, so I'm not losing my mind on who a mop-up guy is. And then they have an offense that's capable. Like, the offensive numbers have shown you that they've been pretty good amongst the leaders in OPS, amongst the leaders in average. They're not amongst the leaders in runs. Why is that? Is it lineup construction? Is it bad luck? Is it hitting with runners in scoring position? So they're certainly capable of it, but they got to go do it, you know?
Yeah, I realize all that, but I just think that, and I keep harping on the fact, the roster's too good for them to be this bad. And then when you look at the division and you say, yeah, everybody, you know, we hear all the numbers. We know the numbers are stacked against them in terms of getting off to this bad of a start and finding a way to make the playoffs. But when you look at the division with a team that starts off this bad, normally you're 10 or more games behind at this point. Like, you're really chasing it at this point. When you look at the standings after last night's games and you're only six down, it's like, that's doable. It's not even a wild card. You could actually still win your division. And with the team and the roster that they have on paper, and with guys that have been underperforming for most of this point in the season, to start finding it, to have guys that actually are viable players on a night-by-night basis in the outfield at first base, and then you know you're getting pitching help that's going to continue to kind of trickle back to you to enhance everything with your pitching opportunities – to me, it's just it's too early in the season with too good of a team for me to think anything other than the fact that, one, they can make the playoffs. I truly believe they're still going to win the division.
Yeah, I'm kind of teetering on it. I'm with you on their roster being too good to miss the playoffs. If you miss the playoffs with this roster, it's an amazing failure. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, I'm the prediction game. Like, there's a reason that I work in sports radio, and I'm not at the ticket in Vegas, you know, betting every single one of these games. 4-0-7-1. If we aren't talking about this 10-game homestand in those months, then we ain't in the playoffs because we didn't take advantage of the stretch. They do got to take advantage of the stretch. 9-9-1-3 division is bad word. Let's not pretend this isn't a winnable division for y'all. No one said that there wasn't. I think that they had this. The rest of the division had a chance to bury the Astros, and they haven't done it yet. Can the Astros take advantage of that? We hope. Mm-hmm. Don't know. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Big, big stuff going on in the basketball world today. Nothing with the NBA playoffs, nothing with Luka, nothing with whatever happened, OKC, SGA, Chet Holmgren. No, none of that. Caitlin Clark makes her WNBA debut tonight. How much does that move the needle? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for Vanderford Air. Vanderford Air experts in so many different things. You have plumbing issues, they got you. You want to do a repipe, they got you. You want to put a full humidifying system in your house, they can do that. And their main focus for you as well is HVAC, AC, and all the things that are so vital to people living in Houston, Texas, to make sure that you can keep your house cool on a consistent basis. You know that it's always a priority, but you always just assume it's going to be there. When your air conditioning goes down, you need someone, and you need them fast. And in most cases, the companies that you call here locally are going to say, we'll be there in a couple days. We'll be there as soon as we can. We're backloaded right now. No telling when we might be able to get to your house. Vanderford Air is different. When you call them, no matter how busy they are, within 24 hours, they're going to come and see you. That is a massive, massive guarantee that can help you when you need them most. And the other guarantees that are there, they just only solidify why I encourage you to try Vanderford Air for anything you got going on, because it's all 100% money back guarantee. They give you the best value at the lowest cost to you, guaranteed. Comfort assurance guaranteed. The temperature will be exactly what they say it will be. Everything's going to work exactly how it's supposed to. The work that the people from Vanderford are going to do, it's guaranteed. The performance of the parts and the all the different machinery and systems that they put in, it's guaranteed. And the biggest thing is, if you're not 100% satisfied with everything that they do and what they've done for you, your money back. 100% satisfaction guarantee is massive in today's day and age. But when you can trust them with so many things, heating and air conditioning, plumbing, humidifying systems, everything under one roof, that is always going to be the same company with the same family values that are dedicated to Houston. Check them out today. Save this number. Maybe have them look at your system now to see if there's anything you need to be worried about before we get to triple digits. 281-557-COOL. 281-557-COOL. Or check them out online, VanderfordAir.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.